Dawn Show on Talk Radio 1210 WPHT and the free Odyssey app.
James O'Brien, thanks for being here today.
Hey, great. Thanks for having me on.
Absolutely. So, you know, when we think about, when we look at AI and we want to talk about the AI race with China, and that's really what I discern from, you know, all the executive orders where Trump was creating this economic council. And we heard from all the experts, and that was Friday going into the weekend. And really the focus here, everything is about AI. So not just making sure that we as the United States of America get a hold of this thing and beat out China, but then how do we do that? First of all, do we have the energy source? Because we know now that it takes more energy to produce the AI. But let's say we win that race, then how do we support it? Because presumably AI replaces a lot of jobs. And so do we lose our tax base? So can you take us through it, James?
I'm sure, yeah. So first of all, I mean, right now what we have as AI, you know, it's not, you know, like in science fiction, Star Wars and stuff where it's alive and thinking. What we have, though, is systems now that they're good at sort of mimicking the behavior of thinking, and that allows them to do things that normally a human would need a human to do. And, you know, for example, write code or compose music even. So the problem with this is that as these systems become more capable, they start to become, in some cases they already are, in some cases they're actually even better than humans at doing the same task. And when that happens, you know, what's going to happen is, you know, the companies that are doing business or even individuals, if you're given a choice, for example, to, you know, have your taxes done by an AI system for, you know, $5 versus paying an accountant to do it for $500, you know, people, companies, everybody's going to make the choice to go with the cheaper, more effective option. And unfortunately, you know, that's, you know, on one side, that's great because it's going to make a lot of things less expensive and give us, you know, a lot of people access to things that might not otherwise be available to them. You know, for example, AI robot could be your housekeeper. You know, today you have to kind of wealthy to afford that. Well, maybe in the future it'll be something that's very common, just like having a car. The problem, though, is that then, for example, housekeepers would be out of work, or in the case of systems that write code, programmers are already experiencing this, finding it more difficult to get work than in the last few years. And so that's, you know, obviously people not having work is a big problem, but it also kind of snowballs a little bit with the way our economy works, which is the bulk of the federal government's income, the money that the government uses to fund everything, comes from taxes that are based on employment. There's obviously the income tax that we all love and hate, or, you know, whatever, mm-hmm. It's there. But keep in mind that there's also Social Security, payroll tax, and Medicare, and those all are also dependent on somebody having a job, right? If somebody's not working, they don't pay income tax, they don't pay Medicare, they don't pay Social Security, and there's no payroll tax. That adds up to, I don't have the exact number with me, but it's like around 80%, I believe, of the federal, you know, federal revenue. And so the thing that I think is concerning that we need to be looking forward to figuring out how we're going to deal with it, is what do we do when we have a world, a country, where there are fewer and fewer jobs available? We can't let people starve, and so we're going to have some kind of support mechanism. But at the same time, those support mechanism, whatever it is, whether it's you know, welfare, Social Security, unemployment, something new, whatever, it's going to cost money, and we're going to have that expense occurring at the same time the revenue that the government has to fund these kinds of things is dropping. And you know, the way I see this is, you know, you kind of think about the idea of, you know, quote, robots doing all the work, and just imagine you were reading a story about this. You're reading, you know, the first sentence is, you know, once upon a time in the future world, all the robots did the work. Well, whether that's good or bad depends on the next sentence, right? Mm-hmm. If the next sentence is that the society has found a way to take the proceeds from these machines doing work and share it to society, then that's probably a very nice story, some sort of utopia, right? It, on the other hand, if it's, you know, a situation where we don't have a way to share the proceeds and they just get concentrated more and more to the handful of people that own the large corporations that own the AI and own the robots, well, that's more like Hunger Games, right? You know, that's not a good situation. Mm-hmm. And I think that this is something that a lot of people are maybe a little, you know, the idea, I think, to a lot of people is maybe a little bit disturbing because we're used to hearing ideas like, you know, for example, UBI, universal basic income, and thinking, oh, well, that doesn't sound great because people who have jobs would be taxed to pay for people without jobs. And, you know, know, there's a certain resistance to that idea for I think perhaps some good reasons. But what we're looking at in the future is going to be a world where maybe people don't have to work, and what we'd be, you know, the effort that we'd be taxed, it wouldn't be effort by humans, it'd be effort by our machines that we've built. And keep in mind, again, these aren't machines that are like alive and have feelings or anything like that. They're just very good at doing certain types of tasks, or actually a very wide range of tasks at this point. And so it's not like they need, like, it's not like your AI system needs to have a salary and, you know, a place to live or anything like that. It's a program. It doesn't need any of that. And so if you kind of think about the equation that we have today, today a human gets a job, they do some work, they create some value, whatever their job is. And, you know, that value is shared between the company that they're working for, the individual that's doing the work, their salary, and the government then comes in and takes their share in taxes. And if you take the human worker out, you now just, you know, now there's no way for people to benefit from, you know, and we need to put them back into that equation. That's kind of what I'm suggesting.
Yeah, so, you know, I guess my question is, as far as the AI race, are we already losing that to, like, right now, snapshot, today? Are we losing that race right now where we are with China? Are they winning
I don't think so. I mean, one of the things that's kind of interesting about this technology is that we're used to, when we think of like technology and controlling it between, you know, export controls and, you know, other countries that we might be in competition with. I mean, you think about something like, for example, nuclear energy, right? That's mm-hmm. very easy technology, well, relatively easy technology control, because it's hard to get nuclear materials. And if you have them, it's hard to handle them safely. And if you have them and you can handle them safely, it's hard to build a reactor, right? That stuff's very complicated to build. Even if you understand how to build a reactor, actually doing it is a completely different story from just understanding the idea. With AI, developing the AI models is very expensive. You read about, you know, Google spending $100 million on training a particular model. But once one of these AI systems is built, they're actually really easy to use. Using them doesn't actually take anywhere near as much electricity as people think. I mean, I'm able to run a version of Llama 3, which is one of the open source AI systems from Meta, Facebook. I'm able to run that on my laptop with just a regular, you know, regular 100 watt power supply that you plug in the wall, the one that came with the laptop. And it's able to do in 5 minutes the same amount of work that I might be able to do in 5 hours.
Because I'll tell you the truth, I think I have teenage boys, when they're up, both of them, in their rooms, and they're on their whatever, video games or whatever they're doing, the TV signal, this is my, like, vast knowledge right here. I'm like, get off the game! You know, I'm trying to watch whatever. So the Wi-Fi is affected, so that's kind of how I picture this, that
sure.
Whenever they're on their Meta, and they've got the whole, you know, virtual thing, and they're whatever, they're playing war games or whatever, the whole house, like everything else, slows down. So you're saying it's not that draining of the energy system? Because I just perceive that it was with AI, that it drained, well, I mean, you know, the energy more, took more energy.
Well, again, you know, so that's, it's for, you know, training the AI. So, you know, an AI system, if you actually look at the code's actually not, there's not really a lot, the code's actually pretty simple. Compared to Microsoft Word, for example, the code is pretty simple, and it's much smaller. Like Microsoft Word's a bigger problem, bigger program than the AI that I'm running on, that I'm using to do work. The power of the AI comes through a process of training where you basically expose the AI to a bunch of problems and solutions. And, you know, that could be, you know, anything from predicting what the weather is going to be to how to respond to a question. You know, I ask you, you know, how are you doing today? Well, you know, as human beings, we know how to respond. Well, you train the AI how to respond. That training process is what you read about that's so expensive, that costs $100 million. But to put in perspective, that training process is building the thing that now can be copied 100, a million, as many times as you'd like to, and used by people on their laptop. So if you want a comparison, training the AI is kind of like building a factory, right? It's very expensive, costs a lot of money to build a car factory. But once you have it, you can use that car factory to build things, you know, build cars that are relatively, you know, nice, you know, relatively inexpensive car can be built in that factory. And the fact that the factory is expensive doesn't mean that necessarily the car is expensive, right? And so it's kind of the same with the AI, right? Training AI might have been really expensive, but using it not so much. And this thing that you compare this to, you know, your kids playing the video games, mm-hmm. it's kind of funny, right? If your kids are playing video games on a gaming computer, what you typically have, and I'll throw some numbers out here, right? You have a machine, you have a CPU, you have the GPU on the computer, and you add it up. It uses about a kilowatt of electricity, right? If that thing's running full power.
Mm-hmm.
That's more than what the AI on my laptop is using.
Oh, okay.
Right? Just to put it in perspective. And the network stuff is kind of interesting because, you know, the network is different than, is, you know, the Wi-Fi is separate from the power, right? The Wi-Fi is like using, it's the communications. And that's the other thing that's kind of interesting, right? If I'm able to run the laptop locally, then I don't need to, I can actually turn off my Wi-Fi and still use it. And this is one of the things that a lot of people right now may be, you know, downloading the software, installing on your computer. Is, you know, it's not super simple right now. It's not as easy as installing Microsoft Word, for example. So a lot of people are still using AI systems that are running in the cloud. And so you're sort of, your computer's talking over the internet to somebody else's computer, you know, OpenAI's computer or whatever that's running the model. And you give it a prompt, it sends back the information. And there you do need the Wi-Fi, you know, the network connection. And also there's a concern in that case that, you know, whatever you're saying, whatever you're discussing, whatever you're doing with that AI system, OpenAI has access to it. And they use it for training their model and make it even better. If you download the model onto your machine and run it locally, you don't need the Wi-Fi. And after you download it, you don't need it. Mm-hmm. And whatever you're doing is private. It's on your machine. And so if you're, you know, using the AI to develop your business strategy or something that you don't want, you know, anybody else to know about, or some other, you know, even the government handling classified information, being able to run the model locally on your machine gives you, you know, a certain measure of privacy. And I think that's one of the directions you're seeing. You know, their AI systems now, you know, I just saw an advertisement from Google, AI systems that can run on your phone and that actually do voice synthesis and recognition, so you can talk to it, right? You don't have to type to it the way you might with some of the current systems that people are familiar with. You can actually talk with it, right? And this is what we're sort of moving towards. And you know, the thing that makes the big difference, the reason why this AI is so powerful, I mean, we're used to talking to Siri and Alexa and so forth, but they've never been particularly clever, right? You know, if I tell Siri, you know, I have some smart lights in my house, I can tell Siri, hey, turn on the lights in the kitchen, mm-hmm. and, you know, Siri will do it. But if I say something complicated like, make the kitchen lights the same brightness as the dining room lights, Siri gets confused. Well, these AI, because it doesn't follow any of the patterns that Siri was specifically programmed with. With these AI systems, they're programmed to deal with natural language, and so you can actually give them instructions like that, and it'll figure out what you mean and then go adjust the lights properly. That's really different than the sort of experience we have today with these voice assistants. What we're going to see, you know, really within the next year, because this technology is moving very quickly, is, you know, really going to be, it's going to look like science fiction. In fact, it already kind of does. But again, you come back to the problem. These systems are so capable. If I'm able to, for example, you know, like I said, get my taxes done or, you know, whatever it is I need to do that I would have hired a person to do, and I'm able to do it for essentially free using one of these systems that, like I said, I can just run on my laptop or even on my cell phone, we do have the question, you know, well, you know, what are people going to do? And, I mean, I think there's sort of two sides of the question, what are people going to do? There's one, we talked about how will they get money, but also people, you know, we like to do things. If you're sitting around the house and you don't have anything to do, we get bored and kind of feel dissatisfied. And, you know, that's a good way to become depressed and unhappy. And so I think we need to be looking towards the future and thinking about, you know, how do we build a world where people will have, you know, even if they're, you know, not able to get a job because AI is doing the work, that they still have the basic level of support. And we should also be thinking about, though, you know, in that world where you don't necessarily need to do to work, you don't need to work to, for example, to, you know, build a house because a machine is going to build it, or you don't need to work to do your taxes. People are still going to want to do things, right? You think about going to a concert. There's nothing in the world that says I have to go to a concert, that I'm going to, you know, die if I don't go to a concert. But I like to go to a concert. It's fun. It's exciting. And when you compare a concert, for example, to, for example, you know, music, we say, well, earlier I said these AI systems are now able to compose music. You might say, oh, no, musicians are going to be out of work. But if you go to a concert, that's very different than listening to music in over your headphones, right? The concert's a whole experience. You see a person on the stage performing. And so you can sort of, if you think about the same with football, people will take football very seriously, but there's nothing that says we have to play football. We do it because we like to. And so if you look at the world, there's actually a lot of jobs, a lot of things that we do because humans like to do them, and we like to watch other humans do them, and we like to talk to other humans, right? So the world that, I, you know, when we look at the future, what I really hope we move towards is one where the necessary stuff, you know, growing food, building homes, that kind of thing, that maybe we delegate to machines. But, you know, we can also, there's a lot of things that we as human beings want to do to interact with each other. And I think that, you know, we can have a society where we still have things that, you know, are important for us to do, whether it's playing a sport or maybe, you know, maybe you're just interested in math, right? Mm-hmm. Kind of interesting. If you look at historically today, we have math and research and sciences done at universities by professors. But if you look, you know, like 200 years ago, 300 years ago, that's not how things were. You didn't have the modern university system wasn't there. The people who did science, who did research, tended to be wealthy people. Why? Because wealthy people had the time to follow their intellectual pursuits and, you know, study things, right? Newton, you know, was able to come up with the theory of gravity because he was a wealthy person who had time to sit around thinking about these things. He didn't have to get up every day and go to work and, he was wealthy. He didn't need to do that. And so he spent time thinking about gravity. So when we look at the future and you think about the idea of humans not having to work, it doesn't mean that we wouldn't be able to do things we want to do. And, I think it could actually be a really nice direction. You know, you think about where we might end up, it could be a really nice place. But we're not going to get there if we don't do some planning right now, because if we just kind of continue the way we're going right now, well, people will start losing their jobs, the government revenue will start falling, and if we wait to react to it when it's already happening, it's kind of too late. I mean, I think we really, today, we should be thinking about this.
Let me just interject if I can, because, and I just want to say, I mean, you are in the nationally renowned, leading in the nation as far as an expert researcher, you know, running the Berkeley Artificial Intelligence Research Lab. And so this is your wheelhouse, your skill set, which is why I joked with you, of course, you know, that, well, this is all simple stuff to you. But I think, you know, I can't help but think so many things. In other words, moving forward, let's say there are robots. Do we end up being the ones who end up working for the robots? I mean, that's kind of what I think we have to be careful of, is to not allow AI to kind of take over our lives, but create a basic foundation so that we can survive and our lives can be enhanced through AI. And even you think about people living longer, caregiving. I mean, there's so many directions mm-hmm. that we could go into.
Yeah, I mean, one thing real quick. I'm not running the Berkeley AI Research Lab.
But you're a researcher with,
Right. There's a whole group of people doing a lot of really interesting stuff. It's actually a pretty big center. But you know, what you're talking about now, I mean, that's also a really good point, which is it's not just that AI can do things, but it's also what we do with the AI, right? So, you know, but this is kind of true already, right? So if I use tools that are available to me to do things that are bad for society, that's something we don't want to do, right? We don't want to mm-hmm. set up things where, like, for example, you can read about already cases where somebody has been, you know, arrested and detained for several days because their mistaken identity, where a facial recognition system identified the person incorrectly. And, you know, I get kind of very distressed when I read about that sort of thing, because the experts know that these systems are not perfect, right? You know, I understand that facial recognition works pretty well, but it's going to be wrong. Just like even an expert, even people are wrong. I occasionally might, you know, mistake somebody for somebody else. The AI systems do have a rate at which they're wrong, and in some cases you can even measure it, right? You can ask the system to identify a million people and see how many gets right. And what this means is that, you know, we can't just put these systems blindly into place and not think about what they're doing, right? Mm-hmm. You can't just say, oh, we're going to put this AI's camera up, and if people walk by and it thinks they're a criminal, it's going to arrest them, right? We still need to use human common sense. And when we, and that's both in turn, you know, at multiple levels, when we respond to, you know, the data we get from AI, the decision we get from an AI system, right? The police officer should just arrest you because the AI said, I think it's this person, right? They should use their head and, you know, look at the picture and do their own identification. But also, when we build the systems, we shouldn't, you know, if I'm building an AI system and I know that this facial identification system is wrong 0.1% of the time, then I shouldn't, you know, represent the system to whoever's buying it as it's always right, right? I should make sure that the limitations of the system are taken into account, not just hope that the people who are buying the system and using it will take them into account, but I should actually build the system in a way where, you know, for example, when I identify someone, maybe it should explicitly say, hey, this identification is tentative and should not be used to go arrest the person. I mean, another example is with people using AI to do their homework. You can go online and see that there are services that will try to, like if I, you know, student writes an essay, mm-hmm. you can give the essay to this, you know, system and it will try to tell you if it was written by AI or by human.
Yeah.
The problem is those systems don't work very well.
Yeah.
One, they're easy to fool. If you're actually a cheater and you want to trick the system, you can have it write whatever you want and then just go through and edit it a little bit. And often that's enough to fool the system.
Mm-hmm.
And so what ends up happening is you actually get the people who are, you know, they don't realize that, you know, this actually happened to me. I had an assignment I gave out and some students, you know, two groups of students submitted almost the same thing. And, when, you know, normally that's cheating. And so I talked to them and what had happened is they'd use Visual Studio, which has now Copilot, which will help you write code. So that's a tool for writing program, you know, writing code that Microsoft provides, and it now has AI built into it. And so the students are told, well, go use this tool for writing your code that now has AI built into it. So they didn't even think they were doing anything wrong, so they didn't try to cover their tracks.
Mm-hmm.
So, you know, I didn't penalize those students. I don't think they did anything wrong. They certainly weren't trying to cheat. They were using the tools in front of them. But those tools that identify things, you see what they're going to do. They're going to catch the honest people and let the dishonest people get by.
Yes.
So the right way to use a tool like that, and I've actually written about this, is, you know, you don't use the tool to punish someone. You use the tool to identify a case where maybe somebody's not doing the work themselves, and then you work with them to, you know, get them redirected onto a better path where they're actually learning something, rather than just using a tool as, you know, oh, I caught you cheating with this tool, and now you're going to get punished, right? That's misusing the tool, and it's also sort of from, you know, pedagogical perspective, not really a great way to educate people.
Yeah, and that's, I mean, I have, so for teenage sons, their teachers nowadays, they say to them, if, because they know it's going to happen, so they'll say, if you use AI, just give me the source. And so what we're trying to do is teach a new generation the ethics of AI. I mean, that's a whole nother, man, I'll tell you what, James mm-hmm. O'Brien, I could, you know, PhD, Dr. O'Brien, I could talk to you and just pick your brain and let you, I just love hearing you speak about this. I hope you come back. I didn't even touch on the fact that you've worked on all of these different films and game companies. And so I know in a part of the world, like my sons, like they think you're a rock star, you know, because this is what you've done as well. So really appreciate you coming on, really appreciate your time, and we hope you come back.
I would love to. Thanks a lot for having me on.
Don Stensland from Talk Radio 1210 WPHT.